human trafficking. It's the loss of freedom to somebody else's control, usually for sexual exploitation or labor. Human traffickers bring between 14 and 17,000 people to the United States each year, and they exploit up to 100,000 new people per year in this country alone. The vast majority are female, many of them girls.
And typically, they're women and children from all walks of life. Most are recruited, and most of them are the vulnerable groups of people, the runaways, the low income, children of abusive parents, single households, and some are just recruited because they're vulnerable and they feel unloved.
Today on Oklahoma Voices, we'll hear a presentation by Dr. Larry Kinchlow from PLICO's 2015 Explore Oklahoma Healthcare Summit. Dr. Kinchlow is a member of the Oklahoma Human Trafficking Awareness Coalition. Prior to becoming a physician, he worked as a psychologist. This presentation was recorded on August the 13th.
Thank you all for being here and taking time from your busy medical practices to be here. I know you're all busy, but it's so important that we learn about the slave issue of our day, and that's human trafficking. I'd like to recognize Dr. Carl Hook, President of LICO, and Nurse Sherry Moore for their boldness in bringing to light and discussing this really repugnant subject that we would like to ignore. But just like a cancer, we're unable to ignore it. Why? Because if we ignore it, it's just going to get worse. And in fact, it is getting worse. You may be wondering how an average otolaryngologist like me got involved in this sort of thing, or how each of you could get involved. You just never know. Mr. Tom Hill of Kimray, also of SALT, Board of Directors, had brought into Oklahoma City in 2013 the She's Somebody's Daughter campaign. And that campaign, as you may remember, were billboards of young women looking intently into the camera with the statement simply saying, "She's somebody's daughter," telling us that each woman represents somebody's daughter and is special, not to be used. Kathleen and I, my wife, joined this group and tried to promote She's Somebody's Daughter, and those billboards were visible for over a year. And then in February of 2014, Dr. Larry Kinchlow, who will be our first panelist, gave a lecture on human trafficking from a medical point of view at Integris Baptist Medical Center. It was an excellent lecture. We didn't know each other because there's a staff of 700 at the hospital we had never met. So we started talking afterwards about how could these splintered groups work together and maybe be more effective throughout Oklahoma City. He knew a few groups, I knew a few groups, and the groups we contacted knew others, and before you knew it, we had the Oklahoma Human Trafficking Awareness Coalition. And so we have some of those groups represented here today. A lot of you traveled with your family this summer. We happened to be going through Denton at the Travel Center, and my daughter actually saw this piece of paper taped to the window of the entrance, National Human Trafficking Resource Center, a phone number there, which was impressive. Just a few weeks ago, we were traveling through Yuma, Arizona by car, and we stopped at the Love's Travel Stop, and I appreciate the Love family for doing this. Truckers Against Trafficking. So truckers have a huge influence on how this can go, and there's actually a group who works to help abolish this problem. Notify the police. And then literally just yesterday, I was through Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport, and at the Cafe Intermezzo on the B Concourse, great restaurant, and the men's restroom, and I assume in the women's restroom, they had this bulletin. So if someone you know, or if you are being trafficked, call this number. So the volume, so to speak, of this issue is raising, and it's important that we as physicians be well informed. So we're here today to define, inform, educate, put a face on sex slavery, awareness within your practice, and hopefully team up as a bondage breaker. So hold on to your seats. This is going to be a crash course. If you're unfamiliar with the details of this cancer of society, it's going to move you, possibly to tears, as I have been moved to tears before, possibly to anger. And this is a pretty normal response because we as healthcare providers are by very nature compassionate. We tend to be intelligent, bold, and proactive, and that's why you're here. So just like a cancer, sex trafficking is growing at an alarming rate, fueled by a multi-billion dollar industry through pornography and prostitution. What's more, there are likely to be sex slave victims passing through your office, and you don't even know it. And so you'll learn about that as well. So Dr. Larry Kinchlow is going to be speaking first, and I'd like to introduce him. He has a bachelor's in psychology, sociology. This is a remarkable man. His intellect is equal to his compassion, as I've gotten to know him over the last couple of years. He is always on the move helping others, either nationally or internationally. He also has a master's in education and counseling in psychology. Went to school at OU, medical school, residency, University of North Dakota, University of Missouri. Practices OBGYN at Integris, and volunteers, like I said, nationally and internationally. So if you will, please welcome Dr. Kinchlow.
Thank you for having me here. As a physician, I'm interested in how did we get here? The other speakers are going to be talking about how we help the girls, how we help the women, what we do once we find them. But as a physician, we know that you can either treat a disease or look at prevention. So I'm really curious about how we got to this point. Well, how did we get to the point that, you know, if you're looking for a woman to have sex with, it's not a woman anymore, it's a 14, 15-year-old girl. So we're going to be talking about some of the sociological issues that got us on the road to where we're at. So I'm going to talk about statistics and definitions, societal factors, and this is going to be the highlights from a talk that's typically around an hour and a half long, so we're going to be moving fast and furious. So let's just look at the numbers. So the data is hard to get because no one's coming out and talking about these numbers. We're seeing a lot of foreign victims who do not have documents. Sometimes people are prosecuted under prostitution laws, lewdness laws, loitering laws, public nuisance laws, things such as this. And so it's hard to get data. Sometimes if these women get involved with local NGO organizations, they don't give the data to the law enforcement agencies. So it's hard to know actually the real scope. So probably all the numbers we talk about is probably underestimation. So basically we think there's at least 27 million slaves worldwide. Most of them are women, half of them are children. And probably about each year more than 2 million children are exploited into the sex slave trade around the globe. So what is human trafficking? Typically, it's a loss of freedom to someone else's control. It is can be done by force, where you physically hold them, you assault them, you threaten them. You can be by fraud, where you use false promises for employment. You promise them benefits and don't give them. Coercion, you threaten their life, you threaten their loved ones, you threaten that they're going to be turned into NIS for shipping back to some other foreign country. So basically, it's loss of freedom to control, and these are the three ways that by the legal definition of coercion. So basically, you have two types. We have national victims, which can be either brought here willingly or sometimes smuggled to the United States. But a lot of these, in fact, in many of them, it's actually victims of United States citizens. And typically, they're women and children from all walks of life. Most were recruited. And most of them are the vulnerable groups of people, the runaways, the low income, children of abusive parents, single households. And some are just recruited because they're vulnerable and they feel unloved. So how does this look like in the United States? Any type of commercial sex trafficking, child pornography. There's a new thing called this intimate partner trafficking. Let's say I have a girlfriend, I've lost my job, I'm in my apartment, we don't have enough rent. I go down to the manager and say, hey, I see that you've been looking at Susie, you think she's pretty cute, let's work out a deal. So they start using sex as almost a bartering. They need a new set of tires, they need a battery for the car, they need, you know, some work done, they need a room and board. So they actually use sex as kind of a bartering tool for different services. In Oklahoma, I bet you guys have all seen these traveling sales groups. In the summer, somebody come to your house and they want to sell you magazines. And they always have some story about, I'm trying to get out of the inner city or something like that. That's typically labor trafficking. They take these young people, typically late teens, early 20s. First thing they do, they move them to another city where they don't know anybody. They give them a quota, and if they don't meet the quota, then they don't get fed, they don't get, sometimes they get physically or sexually abused. There'll be 20 kids living in a one-room apartment, and then if you make your code, you sleep on the bed. If not, you sleep on the floor. So that's a part of labor trafficking that probably many of you have seen come up to your door and not even realized it. Domestic servitude, organ trafficking, child brides, that stuff is still going on here in the United States. So land of the free, we feel like there's probably up to about 14 to 17,000 people that come here every year. Up to 100,000 are exploited within the borders. 90% of trafficking victims are in fact female. And we think that there's probably up to 300,000 children exploited annually. And a child is reported missing every 30 to 40 seconds. So just in the course of this small talk that we're doing here, there's going to be over 100, 200 children end up missing. And we think that up to 2.4 million children go missing each year. And about 500 missing do not get reported. These are what's called the throwaway children. You've got a new boyfriend. He's having an issue with your 14-year-old daughter or your 15-year-old son. They're always fighting. Finally, the kid says, I'm out of here. You say, good riddance, and they go. And you don't report that child missing. They're the throwaways. They're gone. The parents know they're gone. They don't care. And there's probably about 500,000 of these going on each year. Large group of kids who are just kind of thrown into the wasteland. And USA is now the number one destination for sex trafficking. And so why is this a problem to us? When we look at it, in 2003, the Department of Justice said that they found the largest number of survivors from California, New York, Texas, and Oklahoma. Texas is listed as the worst second state in the United States. Houston is the number one city for child sex trafficking. And the reason for Oklahoma is this. If you're moving guns, drugs, or women, you come through, or labor trafficking, you come through Oklahoma City at some point because of our locality. If you're moving people north or south, east or west, you're going to come through Oklahoma because of the way the highway system is set up. In Oklahoma, we ranked number 3 in the nation for women who are murdered by women, by men, and that's the Death and Fatality Review Board, 6th in the nation for reported cases of rape per capita. We're one of the top 10 cities for internet searches for porn, XXX, and sex. So on one hand, we have this idea that, you know, Oklahoma, Bible Belt, the Southern Baptist, you know, God love us, let's sing hymns. But there's a dark side that's out there that's permeating it that we don't want to talk about, that we're probably not this buckle of the Bible Belt that we see ourselves as. So what are the factors related to this? There are so many of them. When we look at societal factors, it's lack of awareness, the sexualization of children, which we're going to be talking about, community factors, peer pressure, social norms, drugs, schools that are underfunded and teachers who are overworked, relationship factors, family conflict, disruption, dysfunction, individual risk factors, history of child sexual abuse, neglect, if you're gay, lesbian, transgender, they have a higher percentage of kids on the street because dad finds out about your questioning of your gender orientation, says, get the hell out of my home, you're on the street, and suddenly you're now in the process of becoming a victim. So when we look at these children, as we talked about 2.5 million run away each year, but the scary number is this next one. Within 48 hours, about a third of these children were already lured or recruited into the sex industry through prostitution or pornography. There are men and women who just hang around malls, 7-Elevens, the bus station, and they look for that child that just looks out of place. You know, it's a Tuesday afternoon and everybody else is at school and you see this young girl looking kind of downtrodden, walking through the mall. Why is she there? Why is she not in school? Why is she there by herself? And they are actually just, they're experts at just kind of finding that vulnerable person who just seems out of place, and they swoop in, I'm going to take care of you, let me find you, buy you a lunch, let me dinner, and suddenly they're into the trade. So within 48 hours, things get really dicey out there for young people in Array. 75% of girls and 44% of boys have admitted to having survival sex. I need a place to sleep, I'm hungry, there's snow on the ground, I just need to get out of the cold, I trade my body for these services, and there's adults out there who will take them up on that offer. Vulnerable children growing up in drug or alcohol systems and cultures. just in Miami, Oklahoma, earlier this year, we had a mother who, she was behind on her rent, so she found a truck driver, and she offered to sell her daughter's 14-year-old virginity for $400. The girl luckily got away, called for help, but this is a mother just, she needed money, so, hey, let's make some money with this. We're seeing more where the parents or family members are actually trafficking their children. Children who have been foster care system are very high at risk. And if you think about it, it makes logical sense. By the time things are so bad in your home that Oklahoma says we are going to take you out of that home, the damage has been done. You've been sexually abused, psychological abuse, physical abuse. You are primed for somebody else to come in to say, I will love you, I will take care of you, I will take care of your needs. And once they're hooked into this person who loves them, the trafficker can do anything you want with them because, again, they're getting those needs met that they did not get met as a child. 80% of all domestic human trafficking victims were once in the foster care system. Family trafficking. One shelter in Las Vegas, they looked at their kids and found as many as 30% of these kids were exploited by family members. Mothers selling their children, fathers, brothers, uncles, whatever. So it's not like some stranger on the street, it's actually happening within the family. And as many as 95% of commercially exploited girls have been previously sexually or physically abused. In fact, the quote that so many of these counselors say is that incest is the boot camp of prostitution. And this is a quote from the U.S. Department of Justice. The stark reality is that the supply is never ending. That little girl who started as a runaway on the streets of Washington and ended up on the streets of Miami as a prostitute is way too common, too typical. There is an endless supply. And that's the problem. These kids are being thrown into the street, and there are people out there who can scarf them up. So the more I get into this, the more I'm thinking that human trafficking is probably the tip of the iceberg, and that underneath it is an even darker and uglier side, which is incest and child sexual abuse. Because human trafficking is out there. Sexual abuse, that's within my apartment complex, that's within my family, that's within my neighborhood. It's closer to home, I think it makes it more difficult to talk about it. But, you know, we always worry about those girls who are being, you know, snatched off the street, but the truth is 85% of all perpetrators of child sexual abuse is someone known by the family, an uncle, a neighbor, a minister, a priest, somebody within the community, someone who's trusted. You know, the struggling mother who suddenly her babysitter did not show up, she goes down two doors down to Joe and says, you know, I need some help. My baby didn't show up. Would you just watch the kids today? I really need your help. Joe says, sure, happy to do it. She's known Joe for 2 years living in an apartment complex. There he is. The kids have been thrown at this guy's mercy. So I think as we get into this, we're going to really have to talk more about incest and child sexual abuse, realizing that in this room alone, about one in every four women has probably been sexually abused. And now people are getting more able to talk about it. I gave this talk to my church a couple weeks ago, and I was amazed how many older women in their 50s and 60s came up to me and said, this happened to me. I never felt comfortable to talk about it, but now I can, and let me tell you my story. There are people out there in my generation who want to tell the stories because this is so taboo in the past that no one had the guts to talk about it. So we look at what are the factors related to incest and child sexual abuse. Typically, it's divorce with a man other than the biological family living in the home. Low mother-daughter closeness, low marital satisfaction, domestic violence, low income. Mothers who are sexually and emotionally unavailable, and parentally approved nudity and or pornography. Those families who pornography is prevalent in the home is a very high risk for incest. Also, child sexual abuse. Many authors say that this is the longest and most fascinating history of disbelief. It's very rare that a child will actually lie about sexual abuse. But if you talk and look at it from a child's point of view, they're screwed. Because if I tell this to somebody, what's going to happen? My dad's going to be gone. He's the support for the family. It's going to break up the family. You know, I know what's going to happen. So the kids get put in this untenable situation, either accepting the abuse and maintaining it, or taking it to the proper authorities and letting the chips fall where they may, and they know what can happen. I may end up in foster care. You know, that may not be better than being sexually abused at home. So the children get stuck in this really no-win situation many times. Child sexual abuse typically starts around age of around 3, and full intercourse about age 4. Most people don't think it happens that early, but it does. And then I think that what happens is this goes on and on and on, and the kids, they do not see this as sexual until they hit about the age of 13, 14, 15, and then they realize they go to some friend's house for a sleepover, and she talks and she says, your dad doesn't tuck you in with this little special way, and she realizes what she thought was just normal is not normal, and I think that's why that girls typically leave home around 13, 14, and 13 is actually the average age of starting prostitution. It's because this is when they hit the age of awareness. So vulnerable target children, minors are now the number one way of finding kids is through the internet. We have no idea how the kids look at the internet. These relationships are not just, you know, people out there. These are their friends and family now on the internet. They have this community called Cappers, where they get these young girls online, they recruit them, they do this, from a psychological point of view, it's fascinating how they work these girls, they get them to do what they want. And then if you capture them, you get certain points if they flash their breast, if they're full nudity, if they masturbate or do a sex show. And they actually, within this community, these groups of men, almost like a group of jackals, will find these girls and capture these things. And I saw one transcript where it took only 43 minutes for this girl. She says, I'm 14 years old. I'm not going to take my clothes off. 43 minutes later, she's buck naked, putting on sex shows. The adolescents do not know how to say no to this wave of pressure that they see on the internet. We had a case just at Baptist 6 months ago. I was talking to one of the nurses, and she said that she had her stepchildren over for the weekend, and a 12-year-old girl who was the most nerdy girl you could think of, flannel clothes and, you know, 4-H member and everything. Suddenly she saw her going into the bathroom with the iPad and finally got the iPad away from her, and she was doing sex shows in her bathroom while her parents were outside for guys on the internet. This is happening more than you imagine. The more I do this, I think it's probably more dangerous to leave a child at home with an open internet than a loaded gun. So how did we get to this point? So we have to look at what we're doing as a society. These are all women that, from their society, these are very attractive, sexy women. Now, they may not do it for us, but in these societies, these are the bomb. So let's look at what we're doing. We're sexualizing our children. This is a from Dance Moms, where they had the idea of, let's have our girls who are ages 9 to 12 dance up as strippers from the 50s and 60s, where they're dancing up as fan dancers. And no one stood up and said, ladies, this is wrong. We do not have our daughters portray themselves as strippers for a contest. This is just wrong on so many different levels, but all these mothers, no one raised their hand and said, my daughter's not gonna do this, I'm sorry, she's not gonna be a stripper. We now look at advertising. All of these models are under the age of 16, and they've all been dressed up with makeup and clothes to make them highly stylized and sexualized. In fact, Vogue is now banned underage fashion models, and France and Russia has now banned beauty pageants for girls under 16. And this has been going on a long time. This is the old Baby Soft commercial, for some of you guys who are old enough to remember, you know, because innocence is sexier than you think. Well, the message here is typically sexualizing young children. In fact, the American Psychological Association came out and said these images may contribute to the trafficking and prostitution of girls, helping to create a market for sex with children. If the idealized female sex partner is a 15-year-old girl, male consumers may demand pornography featuring such girls and an opportunity to have sex with them. So we have this society that we're sexualizing our young people, and then we wonder why men are looking for sex with young girls, and many times the problem is us. This is on advertising. The evidence supports the idea that supply is getting younger in response to the buyer's demand for youth due to perceptions of healthiness and vulnerability. Sex trafficking in the United States children is driven by the demand of commercial sex acts they perform. In a sexually charged society that both encourages promiscuity and covets the innocence of youth, it follows that the demand of the victims arise to meet the cultural glorification of underage sexuality, and this is from the National Report on Domestic Minor Sex Trafficking. So a lot of the reason we got to this because we get so numb to all the sexualization of young children, we don't see it anymore, but it's having a profound effect on our society. This is actually from the committee opinion from ACOG, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecologists, that this has got to the point that they actually have a bulletin about, as an obstetrician, what we should ask our patients. Can you leave your job if you want to? What are your working conditions? Where do you eat and sleep? Do you have to have permission to leave? Has anybody forced you to perform a sex act, or has your family ever been threatened if you do not perform a sex act? So this has got to the point that they want all obstetricians to know this, and I'm assuming there's probably something like this in family practice and the American Academy of Pediatricians as well, but I don't know that as a fact. Way you may see this in emergency room and labor and deliveries, you may see botched abortions, job-related injuries. They take foreign nationals who are undertrained. They put them on these very technical machines and large equipment, and they're not very trained. They have injuries, but they don't care because if Jose, crushes his foot, they have another person waiting in the rings who will be happy to take his job. Pimp tattoos, cigarette burns. So here's an example of cigarette burns you could see on somebody's arms. These are pimp tattoos. And the reason these are done is the pimp wants to identify his girls so that another pimp will not move in. So you actually, you're branding your cattle, they do this for the girls so that they can identify who are theirs so no one else is moving on their girls. It is now, human trafficking prostitution is now the second most profitable criminal business behind drugs. And the problem is because there's so much good money. Victims can be sold many times. You can buy $2,500 worth of cocaine and sell it for $250,000. But you can buy a Romanian girl for $2,500, and if you'll take a gypsy girl, you can get her for $1,900, and you can sell her for over $150,000 year after year after year, and most of the working lifespan for these young ladies is about 5 to 7 years before they're burned out or killed. Internet sex ads for things like the Super Bowl increases over 200 to 300% with big soccer events, Super Bowls, Republican, Democrat convention, things like that. These ads go up. Anything that draws men will draw trafficked women. And how do these women get recruited? It's really pretty easy. Somebody offers them a better life. Typically, they're single mothers, they got two kids, and they want a better life for their kids. So they get, somebody says, hey, if you come to Las Vegas, we're going to teach you to be a dealer. American men love pretty girls with foreign accents, and you're going to make money hand over fist. You get to stay in a nice apartment with three other girls, and once you get trained, you'll have jobs waiting for you. They get there, and this is all you need to do is control a woman. You don't need drugs and violence. You just say, they get there and they say, by the way, we'll change the deal. You got to work for us as a prostitute. And they can say, no. They go, fine. Are those your kids back home? Yeah. Well, Olaf is watching them. And Olaf loves little boys and little girls, and he likes to do mean things to them. So you can leave right now, and that's fine. But we're going to be making a phone call before you get out of the door, and we're going to call Olaf, and we're going to sick him on your children. So even if you do see your children again, you probably wish you hadn't. So it's easy to manipulate these women once you get them away by just threatening their families. So just with a cell phone and somebody back home watching them, and you have them totally controlled, and they feel like they have no other options. So if they do escape, how do they escape? They can become unprofitable. Sometimes the girls disfigure themselves. Sometimes they ask for clients for help, but this is dangerous because many pimps, they will actually send in customers who will be sympathetic on the surface, saying, I did not know you were trafficking. I did not realize this is against your will. Let me help you out. And then when the girl says, yes, I will leave with you, then the pimp comes in and beats them mercifully because it's been a setup. And where are they supposed to escape to? Do you send the 15-year-old back to the home where she's being sexually abused? Do you send them back to the country that they left for financial or social reasons? Many times they go from sex slave to prostitute because that's what they know. Typically, they end up with drug and alcohol addiction problems, and many times they're being used for tools for the prosecution. So what not to do? Do not try to gather evidence or solve the case. Leave that to the professionals. But what if it's nothing? Your suspicion is enough to act. Most cases start with that simple feeling that something's not right. On labor and delivery, we call it the creep factor. a nurse will come out and say, boy, I'm just getting those weird vibes from that guy with that girl in triage or down the ER. They just get this really strange, something's not right here vibe. Most likely, that's probably all you need to get started on. You do not confront the businesses or employers or the trafficking. These can move the people and cover up the crime before the authorities get in. And these are very bad people. They will kill you. I mean, if you want to interfere with somebody's, you know, girl who's making them $350,000 a year, they will kill you and not even think about it. So the idea that you report it to the proper authorities, hotlines typically know which officials are trustworthy. I like this closing note, nothing that's faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it's faced. Thank you much.
I told you to hold on to your seats, and you can see why. A lot of information. Thank you, Dr. Kinchlow.
A presentation by Dr. Lawrence Kinchlow at PLICO's 2015 Explore Oklahoma Healthcare Summit, recorded on August 13th in Norman. You're listening to Oklahoma Voices.